Take it away, Kate.
Thanks, Paul. And I'm sorry I didn't get to hear your intro there, but say this is Kate Dean. I'm County Commissioner, District 1, Jefferson County. Thanks so much for tuning in to this conversation. It's a reckoning conversation with Black, Indigenous, people of color in Jefferson County, and Sheriff Joe Knoll. And we're also joined by Mayor Sandoval and Interim Chief Serber from Port Townsend. To start off, I'd like to extend my gratitude to my very wise woman friend, activist, mama, Macaw tribal member, Sabrina McQuillan Hill, who's going to lead us in the land acknowledgement. Sabrina.
Thank you, Kate. It's important to acknowledge the land that we're gathering on, even virtually, before we move into this heavy time of discussion. So I am really pleased to be here with you all. And I just want to acknowledge the many tribes that gathered here in Port Townsend, Jefferson County. This was a gathering place for a lot of tribes to come and hunt, to fish, to trade, things like that. And these tribes are including the Tsleil-Waututh, the Macaw, the Chimicum, the Quileute, the Quinault, and on Indian Island, the Haida, the Quagiut, the Tlingit, and the Tsimshian. And these were all people that cared for our land long before settlers came here. So just like to acknowledge the ancestors of this land and ask them to help us keep open minds and open hearts during this meeting today. Thank you.
Now we'll turn it over to Kate with the, your opening words, Kate.
You're on.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Sabrina, and to all of our Indigenous neighbors who have shared their land and home with us. I'm just going to open up with a few remarks before I hand this over, but I just want to say how honored I am to have worked closely with Sabrina and all of our panelists, who you will soon meet, for the past over 2 months to shape the conversation tonight. One that I hope will continue in many forms and really needs to happen probably for many years. I am a privileged white woman in power, and I hope to use my position and my accountability to every person in Jefferson County as your elected commissioner to help break the cycles of institutional racism in all the ways that I can. But make no mistake, the goal tonight, as discussed at length with the BIPOC panel you'll be hearing from soon, is to center this conversation on the experiences of brown people in Jefferson County, to amplify their voices, which are often dismissed or silenced, and in the words of one panelist, to burst the white bubble that is progressives thinking that we as a community are any less racist than other places. So how this came about, after the killing of George Floyd at the hands of law enforcement, Americans are waking up yet again to the trauma that people of color have faced in every aspect of their lives since the arrival of colonists. This is especially true of Black Americans, for whom access to justice can be fraught with danger and inequity. With Black men 4 times more likely to be killed by police than their white counterparts, Americans have to face the truth that our systems are still steeped in historic and institutional racism, which perpetuates poverty, violence, and deep psychological wounds. So Jefferson County, as a county government, is in the process of reckoning with this reality. And county governments have been complicit in reinforcing racism since their inception, whether through unfair sentencing in courts, redlining neighborhoods to ensure segregation, or the use of sheriffs to catch and return slaves. Counties have to take a long, hard look at their past and ask themselves how they continue to perpetuate this oppression. And today is just one little baby step in that process. So how predominantly white rural communities like ours do this, it feels really challenging and uncertain to me. It's going to look different here than it looks in, say, the south side of Chicago, where I grew up. But what I know is this: the white folk, who work at the county, your elected officials, white progressives, have a lot of learning and listening to do. And we have to explore the ways that white privilege pervades our lives and our communities, and be willing to hear from the Black, Indigenous people of color, our community, in our community, when they tell us that all is not well. And we have to hold our elected officials, myself included, accountable for our actions and our inactions. While the sheriff sets his department's policy, the commissioners set the budget. So we have to work together to identify values and our shared priorities that reflect dignity for everyone. So I'm weary of asking BIPOC folks to give their energy to educating white folk, especially at a time when tensions are high and their safety may feel at risk for speaking out, and they may be, frankly, tired of doing it and seeing no change. But I feel really grateful that this group of local activists and friends have agreed to join us today to talk with the sheriff about what it's like to be brown in Jefferson County. So welcome. We're going to be joined by Paris Jade in a little bit. She's joining us late. We have Cameron Jones, Sabrina McQuillan Hill, and Victor Paz as our panelists, and Daryl Thomas as our moderator tonight. So it's time to stop hearing so many white voices. I'm going to hand it over to the panelists to introduce themselves. The rest of the program is going to be moderated by Jefferson County Probation Officer Daryl Thomas.
And Daryl, I'm trying to unmute. There you go.
Got it. Thank you, Kay, for sharing those words. I just want to welcome everyone listening to this conversation that is very important. And so you are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM. This is a special radio broadcast of this moderated panel and this conversation between Black, Indigenous, and people of color, BIPOC, and Jefferson County Sheriff Joe Noll. So my name is Daryl Thomas. I'm originally from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, growing up on the east side. You know, my neighborhood, you know, was mostly majority Black. And so I've been living in Washington State for 9 years. My background consists of working in social services and transitioned into the criminal justice field about 3 years ago. I've actively been working on these relations with law enforcement in my community, where I live in Bremerton, for the past 7 years, following the killings of Trayvon Martin, Eric Gardner, and many others. We started these meetings in relationship building with our local law enforcement agency because of the unjust deaths of Black people by the hands of law enforcement, and to try to bring peace to our community and accountability to our local departments. Currently, I'm working with 4 police departments, including Jefferson County Sheriff and PTPD. My goal of working with these departments is to use restorative justice practices, which roots come from Indigenous peoples, in order to build relationship with law enforcement and people of color. Unfortunately, the distrust and lack of confidence within our police departments go beyond today, and to my knowledge, no relationship exists. The hope for building relationship is to provide concern and care for the voices of people of color and to take our cries seriously. It is also to destroy the humanizing labels that have been placed on both parties. I look forward to moderating this dialogue today, and I hope that we can make the changes we need to make within our institutions to provide the appropriate care and protections for our minority populations. And I want to thank you all for joining. As we acknowledge and honor the land of the Indigenous people whom it originally belonged to, I would like to share that as we attempt to get clarity and answers on some of these questions our panelists have today, we are using Western colonized structures to attempt to do this. BIPOC community normally gets together without time constraints and rules that society has deemed as quote unquote normal, or the way that these conversations need to work. In my work with restorative circles, we respect one another by speaking one at a time so that we listen to understand. So I just want to ask everyone who is not speaking to mute themselves in order to avoid any distractions or background noise as well. So we are joined by our mayor of Port Townsend, Michelle Sandoval, and our interim chief of police, Troy Serber. They're going to talk about what they are doing in the city to address these issues, and then they will listen for the remainder of the program. They will not be taking questions on this particular panel. So, Mayor and Chief, you have the floor.
Thank you.
Oh, you're muted.
Ask them to unmute.
I try to unmute yourself, Michelle.
Here we go.
Righty.
Okay. Thank you so much. First, thank you, everyone who organized this, for allowing the city of Port Townsend to be a small part of this. We wanted to make sure that everybody out in the listening audience knew that we are very, very much concerned, involved, want to take part in this conversation, but we knew that this was really a panel with the sheriff this evening. But we felt that if we weren't at least here to make a brief statement about the process that we're undertaking in the city, that it would be odd, given that the city is in the county. And so I just want to describe a bit about what the city council has chosen to do, given this time in our country. That is, I'm very thankful that people are paying attention, particularly after John Lewis's magnificent funeral today. It really gave me hope that perhaps once again, this nation can better itself, particularly for our Black Americans and all people of color and our Indigenous brothers and sisters. So with that being said, the City Council has decided to form a council of the, or a committee of the whole, which means all seven members of the City Council are sitting in an ad hoc public safety and law enforcement committee. And we have committed to 6 months of research, data gathering, questions answered, looking at the police budget, looking at the programs that we have instituted, that many of the articles that have gone around have actually recommended a navigator program, which is a person who's fully funded and a part of the police staff that knows about mental health issues, has the service connections for homeless folks, et cetera. Community service officer, both of those members of the police force are not, do not wear guns, do not, the navigator does not wear a uniform. So we already have instituted that. Our last shooting, police shooting, was 25 years ago. And people have asked, well, with all of that that you're doing of these progressive type of programs, why would you even need to do this? And as Daryl said in the introduction, we need to do this to form relationships with the community, the BIPOC community, to show that we are very much wanting to have the conversation. And so we are dedicated to going through this 6 months period, gathering all the data and opening up the conversation to our county sheriff, our county commissioners, the judicial system, because once you're in the system, it doesn't stop just with the police department or the sheriff or the jail, as well as stakeholders in this community, which is the BIPOC, our BIPOC brothers and sisters. So that's where we're at. And I'll turn it over to our interim chief, Troy Serber, who's been with the department for 24 years. And I'm grateful that there is no opposition into this investigation, this research, education, both for the council, but also we hope that the community will tune in so they too can be informed about what the policies are that our police officers work under here in this city. Thank you for your time. Thanks everyone for being on this panel this evening. And we hope to join you again in future conversations.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here tonight. I'm here to listen and to understand, you know, to enhance our perspective on the issues of community engagement by law enforcement and the institutional and systematic racism in public safety. We are always looking for ways to elevate the services we deliver. And that begins with actively listening to our community. So again, thank you very much.
righty. So, Daryl, I think we're going to ask you to introduce Joe Knoll. Are you... Do I need to mute? Yeah. There we go.
All right, yeah. I'm not pressing mute.
Uh-oh. Looks like we might have lost Daryl there for a second. You still there, Daryl? Yeah, I'm not muting anybody at this point. And let's see. I'm making sure we're trying to get everybody on there. Daryl, are you back with us? Daryl's frozen. So we're going to have to see if we can figure out what happened there. Maybe get him reset and back in. So just while we're working on that, I will just go ahead and introduce. Let's see. Is he coming back? Nope, he's gone. Okay. So I'm just going to go ahead and introduce Joe Knoll. Oh, yeah, you're listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM. This is Reckoning. This is a big special event. And obviously, we're doing it with Zoom, and we live in COVID times, and these are COVID realities. We'd much rather be doing this in a public forum, but at least we're doing it, right? So I would like to, we're joined by Sheriff Joe Knoll, and like to welcome the sheriff and ask if you'd take a few minutes to talk about what it's like to be in charge of a law enforcement agency these days.
Okay. Well, hello, everyone. This is Joe Knoll. I'm the sheriff, Jefferson County Sheriff. And first of all, I want to thank Kate Dean and Daryl Thomas and KPTZ for putting this together. And I want to thank the panelists who've taken time out of their busy days and lives to come here and discuss this important topic. And I want to thank the listeners for tuning in as well, because I think there will be something to learn for everyone here. And on top of all that, we're all in this together. As far as being a sheriff in these times, I would have never thought of anything like COVID would come around. I never would have thought that we'd be having basically a public meeting on a computer. But here we are, and I'm glad that this is happening. And there's a few things that I wanted to start by saying. So I'm going to take the time to do that. And first of all, I wanted to say that I recognize and acknowledge Black Lives Matter of Jefferson County and the pain and suffering endured by people of color throughout the many years. I apologize for any part that I may have played in those hardships through inherent biases that I've accumulated over the years of my life as a white person. And I'm learning what systemic racism is, and it has no place in government or anywhere else. And I want to make sure that I want to publicly say that I agree with many of the ideals that are expressed by Black Lives Matter of Jefferson County. And I'm glad, I don't know if that's the right word, but I'm glad there's an organization. You know, Jefferson County, we always seem to pull through and do things when maybe the rest of the country isn't doing certain things. But I'm glad that there is such an organization here and that it's of Jefferson County. I believe that all Black lives have value and that they all matter. I think there needs to be greater flexibility for sheriffs and police chiefs to hire and promote law enforcement officers who are best suited to carry out the agency's mission. And binding arbitration needs to be reformed to provide greater authority to dismiss officers who are not helpful to the agency's mission or betray the public's trust. We need to invest in the community with regards to equitable, affordable housing, healthcare, behavioral healthcare, substance use disorder, education, finance, and jobs for all. We need economic judgment, economic justice that ensures salary equality and fair hiring practices. I believe in the protection of First Amendment rights and that we all have the right to peacefully assemble and make our voices heard. I also agree that vigilantism must not be tolerated and violators need to be held accountable. I believe that white supremacy is not acceptable and that our community needs to hold each other accountable. I stole those words from the Black Lives Matter of Jefferson County, but the community, we need to hold each other accountable to ensure that this is dealt with swiftly when it's identified. And for the most part, I think we all want the same things. We all want fairness, recognition, compassion, security, justice, and peace. Tonight, we have the opportunity to work together towards a greater understanding of each other. I'm here to listen and discover ways that we can work together to address these issues. And I'm really looking forward to the conversation tonight. So thank you.
Thanks, Joe. I set my timer on you and you didn't go over time. So thank you for staying on time. You all are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM. This is The Reckoning, a moderated panel conversation between BIPOC and Jefferson County Sheriff Joe Knoll. And so just want to keep reminding you of that. We are live on Facebook. We're on the radio. We're on Zoom. I think we're on in every room that you can imagine. So just wanted to say that. And so now we're going to have each panelist go ahead and introduce themselves and talk for a few minutes. I will set the timer, but don't feel pressured by the timer. Just want to make sure that we can get through and get to the meat of the conversation today. All right. Let's go ahead and go, Cameron.
Thanks, Daryl. Okay. So my name is Cameron Jones, and I'm here really to represent Black Lives Matter Jefferson County. Personally, I lived here. I've been here since 2013. I've spent many summers and winters before that, since 1999, just coming up here. But first, I really want to state clearly and unequivocally that this whole conversation with law enforcement is somewhat problematic. Our goal at BLM is to empower organizations and individuals within the community who are taking or plan to take anti-racist action that shifts the paradigm from white supremacy to that of inclusivity. And to only have the conversation with law enforcement not only feels performative, but it also entrenches us within this narrative that generalizes law enforcement as an institution that is fundamentally good and righteous and solidifies their power within the white heteropatriarchy framework. We do not believe that law enforcement are by default good and righteous. To the contrary, in fact, law enforcement as an institution with its origins in slave patrols can only be viewed as an inherently racist institution. How can an inherently racist institution be a leader or even contributor to both the policy changes and cultural shifts necessary to create an actively anti-racist environment? Simply put, it can't. It's the people who have the power and wisdom and compassion to police themselves. There are already organizations like Dove House, Recovery Cafe, Jay Karf, Jefferson County Foundation, et cetera, who are working towards that end. But we all need to step up and stop pushing our responsibilities on those who have a vested interest to protect and serve those in power and not the most marginalized in our communities. And since so many white folk in Jefferson County seem to be blind to the fact that BIPOC people do live here, we do, and that there might not be racism here, there is. What I'm trying to do is burst that bubble. So let me just jump into some testimony from people within our organization. For example, we have a Black woman who has lived here for 3 years, yet she's constantly being welcomed to the area as if she's a novelty item. She's been under the white gaze her entire life, which has only been amplified since moving to Jefferson County. She's been belittled for trying to start a business, experiences daily microaggressions, and when she tries to explain this to people, they either treat her like the angry Black woman or say she's just reading into it too much. It's really exhausting to have to explain your existence to people who don't even want to listen. And I think that's a big reason why we're having this conversation today. Another Black femme within our organization, she's been living here since she was a child and has attended Port Townsend High School when Troy Serber was the high school police officer and has, along with her other people of color friends, experienced firsthand his petulance towards youth of color. When bringing this up to people, she too would feel dismissed, would be dismissed, or be labeled a troublemaker, and inevitably advised to hang out with a better crowd. Now imagine being this young Black woman marginalized from a young age by a white man in a position of power, only to now see this same white man hold even more power. It's quite frightening. Her experience with law enforcement officers in Jefferson County go far beyond dealing with irritable men. She has herself been in several incidents where officers acted inappropriately with heavy sexual undertones, even experiencing this at the young age of 16. For her own safety, she doesn't feel able to share these stories herself because we all know what happens when women simply make allegations of misconduct. Another member of an organization, a Black man, just 3 or 4 weeks ago was the victim of vehicular arson. When he reported this to the sheriff's department, they showed up with an excessive amount of deputies, and instead of trying to help this man, cast him as a suspect. They aggressively questioned him in an enclosed space, and when he said he was done talking to them until he had a lawyer present, they only increased their aggressive posture and continued to question him even further. Since then, Jefferson County deputies have harassed this man by driving by his house and parking on his road in what seems like an intimidation tactic. Now, I know I'm probably low on time, and there's so many stories to tell that it's not fair to have this limited time to share these stories. But ultimately, people of color are scared to move here. There are no resources. There's no multicultural community center. And even the image of an old Victorian town is disconcerting from a BIPOC perspective. Yet this is one of the closest things we hold on to as a community, which really needs to change. We don't need more law enforcement or more resources towards law enforcement. What we need is more community resources so we can help ourselves and empower ourselves. That's all I have to say.
Thanks, Cameron. I appreciate you sharing those powerful words, and you know, I want your voice to be heard as well. And I'm hoping that people are hearing your voice, and especially with the concerns that you mentioned. I want to go ahead and give time to Sabrina to go ahead and introduce herself and just your experience as a person of color in Jefferson County.
Thank you, Daryl. And thank you to everyone who's out there listening, including our officials on the panel, but to all the folks here in Port Townsend and probably around the world that are tuning in tonight. It's good to be here. And it's an honor to be the Indigenous voice on this panel. We as Native American people make up only 1% of the population on a land that was once 100% Native. But we have the most deaths per capita by police. A Native person is 3 times as likely to die by police brutality than a white person. And these statistics of police killings and brutalities often go unreported. This is why Indigenous people stand with Black Lives Matter. We know too well what it is like to lose our people at the hands of authority. John T. Williams, a few years back, a Nechanath man, was partially deaf and a wood carver carrying his carving and his carving knife on the streets of Seattle when he was shot in the back. Stonechild's Chief Stick, he's a Chippewa Cree man, beloved by the Suquamish Nation. He lived there in the Suquamish Nation and had mental health problems. He was shot by Paulsbo police because he had a screwdriver in his pocket. Both of these men had mere seconds to even turn around before the police shot them. Indigenous and Black people have suffered the atrocities of colonization for over 500 years. And we're tired of watching our people be abused or die by the hands of those who are sworn to protect and serve. Washington State currently ranks second highest in the number of reported cases of missing and murdered Indigenous women. Jefferson County is surrounded by reservations, and people like me live here in the county, off the reservation, and women are more likely to go missing or murdered off the reservation than on it. 1 in 3 Indigenous women who are, I'm sorry, 1 in 3 Indigenous women are victims of assault, and most go unreported. These numbers happen to get lost in the system. They go unreported because they're white presenting, maybe, or because they just weren't, it was not possible to identify them as missing or murdered, or I mean, as an Indigenous person. And I feel like that's the same in the Black community as well. So I'm here to just bring awareness to that today and have open ears. So thank you for having me.
Thank you, Sabrina. And I just want to take just a short second just to say that, these are the voices of people who voices have been drowned, voices have been in the shadows, And people, you know, especially with white supremacy, has not allowed these voices to be heard. And so as you all listen today, I just encourage you to listen, to understand, and to listen to the stories and the experiences that we are talking about as BIPOC. And I say we because I'm in that group too. Even though I'm moderating, I'm still a Black man, and I have had a lot of situations with institutional racism. And so I just wanted to share that. And so do we still have Victor here? I think we lost Victor.
Looks like we might have lost Victor. Let's see. So, hold on. He's rejoining now. You're listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM, and we're streaming on Facebook. So go find our Facebook if you want to watch.
And go find the Facebook, like it, all of that.
All of it.
Subscribe to YouTube, everything. All right. Let's see. Victor, just wanted to give you your opportunity to speak and about your experience as a person of color in Jefferson County and your experience with law enforcement. And I want to thank you for being here too. Let's see if I see him. Victor?
He's on there. He's unmuted. Hey, Victor.
Did you let him back in?
Yeah, he's back in. Yep. And he's gone again.
I disappeared. You know, so
Cameron has a statement from Jade. We could skip to that while Victor gets back in.
Okay, yeah. So I don't think Jade's going to be able to make it for a statement, so she sent it to me, and I'll just read it out from here. First, I want to apologize for not being able to participate as originally planned, but I am happy to be a part of the discussion regardless. Thank you to everyone for making this happen, and especially to my fellow BIPOC for putting yourselves out there in this way. I always say this and will continue to remind people that retaliation is a real threat to us. By us, I mean POC. My name is Jade. I'm from New York City originally, and I have lived in Washington for almost 6 years. I've been in Port Townsend for almost 3 years now, and may I say, wow, what a bubble. Port Townsend is scenically beautiful, and it has its quirks, but it is lost in the undertow of its own ignorance. I've experienced and witnessed racism from the obvious racist sporting of a MAGA hat to the obvious racist wearing another culture's traditional clothing and telling me they don't see color. It exists so loudly on both sides of the spectrum, leaving little room for us BIPOC to navigate in between. In case you all haven't noticed, we have to fight 10 times as hard to be seen and heard in this country, and even harder to be seen as more than the derogatory stereotypes forced upon us. And when we do finally get a voice, we are being told basically to shut up from both ends. The right says, shut up. We don't care about your problems, nor are we a part of it. And the left says, there is no problem. We are all one. Sigh. The point that I want to make here is that predominantly white liberal towns such as Port Townsend have the luxury and the privilege of being oblivious to racism. In fact, it was by design that it is this way. I've heard people say, we don't really have a problem here, which in and of itself is a problem. It is a clear indication that people are not paying attention. Most people didn't even know that there is a BIPOC community until very recently, and or they just think we're all the same person. Even more insulting, they called us paid protesters and don't even live here. Just because one is blind to problems doesn't mean they don't exist. Regarding my interactions with law enforcement, I moved to Port Townsend, and for the first 3 or 4 months that I moved here, almost every day I would be trailed by an officer on my way home or out and about, and especially at night. One incident specifically, an officer followed so closely behind me that his lights were blinding me. I had to pull over because I couldn't see. And in the moment I pulled over, he switched on his lights and pulled up behind me. The same officer had been following me around town for about 15 minutes, and I was just about pulling up to where I lived and did not feel safe. I was harassed for almost 4 months to the point that I started to reconsider living in Port Townsend. Because I worried about what that would mean for me in the future as a single Black woman to be harassed by cops. Who do you turn to for help when the people who are supposed to serve and protect you are the people you fear? I feel very badly about not being able to be on this call with you all, because I feel like there is a lot more that I like to touch on, but I worry it won't translate well through my written words. What I could say in 4 minutes might possibly look like a novel on paper. In conclusion, I want to say that we in the BIPOC community, myself as a Black woman, we are exhausted and we are not going to do this work, the work for you. If you truly believe that you don't have a problem, that you don't have some sense of internalized racism, then I challenge you to challenge yourself on that. It's not enough to say I'm not racist. It's not enough to say I have a Black friend. The performative allyship only goes so far. How will you all show up after the trend fades? I have included also my question. Okay, that's to me. So
that's it. Thanks, Cameron. And Jade, if you're listening out there, we want to thank you for sharing those words and being authentic with us. And so, Victor, I believe we have you back. Are you there?
I'm back.
All right. So tell us a little bit about your experience. Who are you? Just kind of some of your experience as a person of color living in Port Townsend and your experience with law enforcement.
Sure. Thank you. It's an honor to be here. First of all, I appreciate being invited to the forum and to this panel. My name is Victor Paz, longtime Port Townsend community member since 2008. I guess I'll speak to that question real quick. My experience as a person of color in Port Townsend has been not too dissimilar to everybody else of different color in this town. In 2008, I was what it seemed to me, appeared to me, one of maybe three brown people in town or uptown. And I was often confused by this another person, a close friend of mine, and he was also confused, called by my name. And so it happened so much that we both just agreed that we were the same person. My personal experience being in a predominantly white town has been, I guess, informed by the experience of living in other parts of the country where other parts that I've lived in have not been so white. There are ways in which living in this town has been sort of safe. And I say that because there is that part of being left alone. There is that part of not being called something else. There is that part of being in a different conversation than I've been used to. And even though the conversation and the vocabulary in this town revolves around, let's just say, for argument's sake, a type of wokeness, it's still safe because of that wokeness, but it leaves the question for me: why does it feel like that? And I feel okay being in that space. And why that, if that doesn't make sense to you, let me explain. The reason why a lot of people say that they weren't aware that there was a BIPOC community here until recent marches and protests, it's exactly for that reason. A lot of the BIPOC community, a lot of the Native American community is really not seen. And sometimes it's better not to be seen than to be oppressed and be aggressive towards. And you'll find in deeper conversation, and we hope to have more conversations like this one, that as you start to peel the layers, you will see that we are sort of in hiding. So in towns like Port Townsend, because we're not so exposed to the dangers of systemic racism. What I hear a lot from my colleagues here is a lot of anger and a lot of frustration, because not because of the extent or the grand oppression that they experience in Port Townsend, which they do to varying degrees, but more because the recent environment just reopens those wounds. It's just irritating that 200-year, 400-year itch. And what we really, I hope what we really get out of this, and we want you to hear, those of you who are in political power and political office, is that what we're really asking is to be seen, to be heard. What we're really asking is that you change your relationship to us. What you're really asking is that you revisit your identity and your role in this relationship that we have as a community, as a humanity, as a land that was discovered, quote unquote discovered, and how we got here. There is, in a lot of ways, there is a conversation that needs to point to the system that created what we are currently in. What I really want to, like, where I'm coming from in this conversation, and that I hope to, that we get to, there's so many levels to this conversation, but I hope that we get to one of those levels is the conversation about not necessarily breaking the system, but possibly changing lanes. That if we can, as a society, as a high-tech society, invent and create things and fly to the stars and be on the verge of colonizing Mars and be living on space stations in the universe, we can fix this issue that we've had for 200 years, 400 years. We can, we surely can get to a plain level of equality. And I like to leave with, I like to leave you with a possibility of getting there is by recognizing first the system that created this and how we got here. Second, how do we untangle this knot? And thirdly, understand where the BIPOC community, the indigenous people, where are we coming from? It's years and years of oppression. It's years and years of unnecessary death. It's criminal. It's important that we look at that. Though you may not be in your present form, be responsible for any of that. We are all, to some degree, responsible for changing it. Thank you.
Thanks, Victor. That was very insightful and wise. I just want to, so we have a few minutes, about 8 o'clock. We got to go to a short, quick break. I'm thinking that it's time for us to get into the questions. And so we'll now take questions from the panelists to the sheriff. You know, we want this to be a constructive conversation that focuses on moving forward, with our community counting on us to make changes, immediate changes for the safety and well-being of our BIPOC. And I trust that we can all discuss in good faith the issues we can address today. Because we're live on the air, obviously no profanity or things of that nature. So we don't want KPTZ getting fined. So I got to watch my mouth too. Who would like to go first with a question? Let's see, we got Cameron, Jade, we got Sabrina, and Victor. Any of y'all ready for a question?
I have a comment. I have a comment. Not necessarily a question, but maybe it could inform how subsequent conversations go. And that is, I want to recognize first that Michelle said in her opening statements that that some people have asked the question to the city that is so progressive and already doing so many of the right things, why is this meeting necessary? And that question itself comes from that place. And I wonder if they recognize where that question is coming from and if they can speak to that, if they can speak to that part of the population or part of, or to that idea that that asks that question, if what do they get out of that?
So yeah, so Victor, most of this, the questions are for the sheriff. However, if Michelle, if you would like to speak to that, and even if there could be a conversation afterward or whatnot, you can address that.
Yeah, I'm happy to wait until the end because this is, you know, we had said that we would listen and learn, and that we really weren't part of the original panel. But I'm happy at the end to speak to this Victor's comments or questions. And also, you know, I will just say, Daryl, and the rest of the panel and everybody listening, that at the very end, if there is time, I would like to speak not as the mayor, because that's a box that I'm put in to speak for the city, speak for the city councilors. And of course, that's my role here tonight. But as a Mexican woman, I would love to sort of reflect on the 19 years that I've had of service on city council and the 30 years that I've lived here, just some of the experiences that I've had. But I would hold that for a future conversation or for the very end. But in terms of Victor, you know, just briefly, exactly. So when people ask that, obviously, they're not, they don't have the knowledge of what people of color throughout this country experience. And we are in a bubble here, and there are very kind people and well-meaning people, but they don't get it. And so that's why it's important for everybody to put on their listening, you know, have their listening skills out there. And I try to answer that question, Victor, sometimes with my own experiences reflected back to them, so maybe they get it. Thank you, Daryl, for allowing me to speak.
Yes, yes, no problem. All right. Any questions for Sheriff Noel before we go on break? We've got about 9 minutes. Camera, Sabrina, Sabrina, you want to go ahead and ask a question?
Yeah, Sheriff Noel, I'm wondering how often do you feel like your officers react on their like personal instinct or gut reaction towards a call rather than taking a more mental health approach or really listening to people of color who are involved in a situation?
Well, I get, can you repeat that one more time? Sorry about that.
Yeah, okay. So how often do you feel like your officers, when they respond to a call, how often do you feel like maybe they are reacting more on their personal instinct towards a person of color or someone who has a mental health issue rather than trying to de-escalate the situation?
Well, of course, the plan would be that when officers respond, and I can speak for when I was on the road, I mean, we all have our, you know, our personal, feelings and backgrounds and things like that. But, you know, we receive training, on ways to handle situations and, you know, and it's dependent on the call that you're going to. I can speak specifically for, going to someone with a behavioral health issue, you know, we have training in de-escalation, which is recent. And when I say recent, like within the last 5 years, So, you know, I expect them to, I mean, ideally you try to de-escalate a situation before it gets into any kind of physical, you know, hands-on things and things like that. But, you know, when a deputy goes to a call, I mean, they you know, I believe that our deputies, you know, they want to do the right thing. And I don't think that that the color of a person makes any difference on how they're treated. You know, I don't have any factual I don't know. It's hard to say, but the expectation is that they are, you know, they're professionals. They deal with calls all the time. And you know, when you do that, you kind of get in a mode of, you know, worrying about the call. I am happy to say that I have seen over the years, I've been here almost 30 years now, and not always in a position of authority, of management, if you want to say, but we have gotten way better over the years on how we deal with situations, you know, use our mouths instead of our bodies to get problems solved. I don't know if that answers your question, but if you want follow up.
Does that answer your question, Sabrina?
I think so, but I'm just curious, you know, Cameron talked about the man whose truck recently got stolen and he was, you know, kind of being accused of, you know, and he happens to be a person of color.
Right. And that's a good question. And I, you know, I'm familiar with the case and I'm also very familiar with the deputy that responded. And, there were, you know, it's an active investigation and there's privacy issues and things like that. And I can't get into everything, but there were indications that, there could have been more going on and it was, pursued just like it would have been with anyone else. The color of the person had nothing to do with it. So, you know, right now, at least we've had a couple instances. We had one where a black gentleman was pulled over and when that happens now, we're, you know, accused of, you know, responding because of their color. And that's not the case.
Yeah, Joe. Thank you, Joe, for sharing that. And, you know, as a friend, you know, I just want to share that, you know, we can't, you know, determine the intent of anyone, you know, especially with implicit bias or explicit bias. We can't determine that, you know, and obviously I know that you want to hold, you know, your officers accountable to be ethical in these situations. However, when people of color are speaking regarding these issues and their voice being heard, you know, it's hard to determine the intent of someone, you know, in these situations. And so I just wanted to share that.
If I can just add to that, I agree with you totally. And I can never know for sure. And, you know, that's why I asked you to repeat the question, Sabrina, where you were kind of asking me if I knew what was in the heads of the deputies when they contacted people. And I don't. You know, what I can go on is, you know, if you want to say the evidence of the incident. And I'm not saying that to the person that's contacted that they don't think that or that that's not a legitimate thought to have. And from what I've been learning and what I know now, I could see where that could be the feeling. I mean, it's hard for me to answer these guys, you know, I'm hoping I'm using the right words and stuff, but I could see where someone, a person of color would feel that, yeah, that was the reason that happened.
You know? Yeah, definitely. And I appreciate you sharing that, Joe. And, I mean, we have 3 minutes, so we'll probably only be on this question. And I know I'm the moderator, but I'm breaking the rules for a second. Okay, y'all. You know, and so, like, you know, with the intent, you know, and everything, you know, obviously we can't really, you know, determine the intent of someone when they do approach someone of color. But, you know, obviously the question is, you know, in that situation, would they have treated someone that was white that same way, you know, in that situation? And so, like, That's kind of just the heart of the issue that I think. Sabrina, did you have anything else you wanted to share?
No, thank you.
All right, cool. So we got 2 minutes. I'm gonna go ahead and invite my guy, Paul, on. You guys are listening to KPTZ. It is getting a little juicy up in here. Just wanted to say that.
Feeling the heat.
We really want to have these voices heard and really want to have conversation. That's the only way we can move forward. And so KPTZ 91.9 FM. I'm not going to give y'all my radio voice too much because y'all need to hire me and pay me for that. You know what I'm saying? So
wait. I want to get paid too.
Yeah, definitely.
What you're doing? You're a natural, Daryl. And like you said, you're listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend. This is Paul Rice.